Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
It's a Friday edition here on Zero Black 30, and today we have absolutely no rounds in the magazine. Nothing to talk about at all. Just kidding. We're going to do a one large topic show today because we have the privilege of having my boss, the CEO of Barstool Sports, on and talking a little bit about leadership. I think one of the biggest questions that we get consistently is, one, can I have a job at Barstool?
Yes, that's the overarching number one.
And I don't have the authority to get you a job at Barstool, so don't ask. I don't have that authority. I use my one shot on Kate, got Kate hired, and that's basically all I can do from that point forward. So we get talked to about what to do when we transitioned, how we transitioned out of the military and got into our current jobs or what we're doing. So I wanted Erica to come on and kind of tell what she sees, because she's had the opportunity to interview several different veterans who are looking for jobs, and some of whom have gone to like Ivy League schools or really good schools in general, and some of the mistakes that they made. So I think it'll be a really good thing for you guys to listen to. And all of that is going to be brought to you by, we're having a nice little safety brief today, my friends. We really are having a good safety brief, because today's show is brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Boom.
They want to remind everybody to be safe. It can be a little frustrating, especially if you're in a hurry or running late, to find yourself at a railway crossing waiting for a train. And if the signals are going and the train's not even there yet, you may feel a bit tempted to try and sneak across the tracks. Well, don't ever. To the naked eye, trains often appear to be further away and moving slower than they are, and they can't stop quickly. Even if the engineer hits the brakes right away, it could take a train over a mile to stop.
That's a wild stat.
We got to fucking work on that. That's,
yeah.
Joe's pissing me the fuck off lately. Between Champ and Major taking dumps all over the West Wing, biting everybody. What? It takes trains. It did not take trains a year to or a mile to stop under Trump. Like, this is brand new shit. And
this
is
brand new information. But hold on,
brand new. This never happened. We never had. In the 4 years that President Trump was president, not once did we have to have the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration pay for advertisement on this show to tell us about the dangers of train.
It's true.
2 months after Joe gets inaugurated, here we are talking about train deaths.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find that to be a coincidence at all.
No, not at all.
The engineer hits the brakes right away, it could take over a mile to stop. By that time, it's too late. You're probably dead. The point is, you can't know how quickly the train will arrive. The train can't ever stop quickly, even if it sees you and ends in a disaster. If the signals are on, the train is on its way. And you just remember one thing. Stop. Because trains, they fucking can't. Let's get started with the show. This office, by the way, you can't see everything because it's only a green wall behind me. That being said, this place, if I didn't do this job and podcast and blog and like play my little video games and what have you, this office would be prime train set.
Oh, yeah. Okay. If you were a big model train set guy, yeah, absolutely.
Dude, it's quiet. This office, I could have one of those tracks around like fucking Mr. Rogers around. Mm-hmm. Have the fake grass, put a happy little tree here, happy little tree there.
You could decorate it at Christmas.
That would be sick. That would actually be sick.
Christmas decorations. Mm. If I walk out of my bedroom door, because you walk out of my bedroom door and then right there is the door to my office, I could have a little thing that as soon as I walked out that door, if I'm coming in here, little train horn coming in. It's time to hop off the tracks, my friend. I would love that.
You know, it would be better. You know, it would be better, actually, if when you pulled that horn, instead of the horn, you just pulled the horn and it went, booger platoon.
Oh, booger platoon horn. Maybe I'll see. Can you get custom, Kyle? You probably know this. Can you get custom, like those fog horns or whatever that people put in their trucks, like where it says something.
You want it to say like a certain thing?
I want it to say Booger Platoon, like instead of ba-da-bee-ba-bee-da-boo-boo, like instead of the song.
That's just an audio track. Yeah, you can do that. That's pretty simple.
Oh man. Yeah. Imagine me pulling up. I pull up to the fucking gate at Lackland. Booger Platoon.
We need a Booger Platoon.
You roll up to your kid's school to pick him up. Uh-oh. Yep.
There's that's old Mr. exactly Chaps. What Kelsey the tuba player needs is me rolling up with a Booger Platoon horn.
That's rough.
Oh, man.
Kid in high school, that's exactly what she wants. More reasons to be embarrassed.
You guys want a little train track accident story involving the United States Marine Corps?
Of course.
I have my own, too, but go ahead, Kyle.
I'm not going to say mine's better, but it's going to be tough to beat because this is obviously a competition on who has a better train story. But so the unit I was in at the time, I won't say who they are. They were in Yuma, Arizona, doing WTI. It's this big training exercise. And they had a convoy of trucks going around, came to a train track. There weren't any signs or anything on it because it was really, it was out in the middle of nowhere on like a dirt road. And they saw the train coming, and the driver in the 7-ton with the 970 trailer filled with 4,500 gallons of JP-8 said, YOLO, and shot across that track as the train was coming. The train ripped crashed right into the 970 trailer.
Having jet fuel and just being fuck it and going across.
It's one thing to be reckless. It's in a whole other thing altogether to be reckless with a whole bunch of jet fuel.
Luckily,
one of my corporals back in the day, is that the end of your story, Kyle?
Oh, no, there's so much more. So the 970 trailer gets sheared off of the kingpin of the 7-ton. Thank God, or else the guys in the truck would have died. Explodes in a giant ball of fire because it's goddamn diesel fuel. And pretty much totals two train engines. The conductors had to be life flighted away. It took, I think, 8 hours to put the flames out and clear the tracks. For every hour that a train can't move or the tracks can't be used, it's like $1 million. It wasn't able to be used for about 12 hours. The only way I knew
like the Yuma, Arizona version of the Suez Canal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously. And the XO called me. He's like, hey, Sergeant Gunn, I need you to find me how much a 970 trailer and a 7-ton cost. I'm like, oh, shit.
That's not a call you want to get.
Yeah. Yeah. From then on, it was just bad news bears for everybody involved.
Anytime a train is involved in like military shit, you know, it's probably not going to be a good thing. I had never really worked as what they would call a road MP, where you are doing like police work. I'd always done dog stuff or like field side MP shit. But after I got promoted to staff sergeant, we already had a kennel master in the kennels, and you basically just don't have two staff NCOs out there at the same time. So I didn't want to be the chief trainer anymore. I didn't want to be the company gunny anymore. So they put me in the spot where I was going to be a platoon sergeant or a platoon commander, actually. So I was a platoon commander, and it was my first night on the road. And I hadn't done anything like police work at all since I went to MP school. I had no idea how to write a ticket. I had no idea how to do like even field breathalyzer test. I had no idea about any of that stuff. I get on the call. I'm working nights for the first time as like an MP.
You were working on your night moves?
Yeah, working on my night moves. And I get a call, like I'm riding around with one of the sergeants. He's doing like a left seat right with me, so he could show me like the spots that people are like fucking in the woods, and like where are you gonna find these young OCS people fucking in the woods. So I get this call, and they're like, hey, you guys need to go back over by PMO, the Provost Marshal's office, like where the police station is on base. And I say, okay, well, we get there. They're like, there's a disturbance on the road by the train track. I'm like, all right. So I pull up, me and the sergeant are in the car. I open up the door. As soon as I open up the door, the sergeant had been like, we had basically opposite careers where he had only done MP stuff, like garrison MP work, where he's just a cop, basically. I open up the door and I'm like, somebody's dead. And he goes, what? And I was like, that smell, someone's dead. And he like looks at me completely freaked the fuck out. We walk up to the train track. Sure enough, a Marine had gotten drunk, laid down on the tracks, and got straight up ran over on the tracks. His like blood and guts and head and shit. Like, we had to inventory the body. It was fucking crazy. It was like my first legit. It was either my first or second night working, and so. You don't even realize how many jurisdictions there are on train tracks because they can belong to the federal government. This train track on Quantico was on Marine Corps Base Quantico inside Quantico Town, which is a civilian town inside Quantico. It's federal jurisdiction because it's a train track. And you also have county and city. So you had like five different organizations that were going back and forth about jurisdiction. Meanwhile, the MPs on the scene, we had to do like an inventory of the body and shit. And the corporal that came out, like he had a lot of experience too. He's sitting there making like these inventory notes and makes note of the Marine's haircut, like that just got killed by this train. And he's like, he's got a medium reg. It looks like it was just cut. I'm like, why the fuck would you put that he just got his haircut? Like on this sheet, like is that going to matter? Like, what a weird detail.
Yeah, that's just full on Marine brainwashing taking place.
The only thing I can think of is if there was no other way to identify him, maybe they could go to the post barber or whatever and say, "Hey,
oh no,
you got a haircut."
It was pretty clear what had happened. Like he was
And
he committed suicide because he had like his wallet, dog tags, and everything sat on the side. It was fucking crazy, man. So I appreciate this. Be safe around trains.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen with trains. They're big time dangerous. Not really breaking news there. But I used to love, man, this is probably not what they wanted to say. I wasn't waiting for trains at all. Like when I was a young fella, if it started going, it's like ding, 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 ding. Because in Cantonment, where I used to live, it was one of those spots where, you know, the train would move and then it would come back, move forward, come back. And those slow crawling trains, you could be sitting there for 30 minutes. Mm. Sometimes it just felt like it might be worth it to die instead of waiting.
That's a terrible thing to say.
Yeah, it is a terrible thing to say. So today's topic is not Discord. We're not going to do a train show today.
Yeah,
that would be electric, though.
So we have Erica on to talk about job experiences because there's a lot of things that I would have believed when I was still in, when I was getting out. I would have believed this is a good idea because people, you constantly hear on like job surveys, on internet ads, on ads that come to your door, whatever, that people value. Even when we had the dude from The Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan, on, whenever he was talking, he's like, people love the military discipline. They love the yes sir, no sir, that they are organized and things like that. Well, that's not always the case. And sometimes the way that you do it can be very, very bad. And you come off looking like a cocky fucking asshole. And that happened in one of the main articles that was talked about on the Marine Corps Times this week. It comes to us from a captain. That said, trained as humble leaders who work well in a team environment, U.S. military veterans often climb the corporate ladder at a lightning fast pace. In the 1980s, around 60% of all Fortune 500 CEOs had military experience. But in recent years, only 8% did. Are transitioning military leaders no longer cutting it as leaders in the business world, or is something else dissuading them from entering the industry? As an entrepreneur and active duty military member transitioning back into the civilian world, the cost of paying for a top school will get me where I want to be is daunting. After gaining admission to my number one choice MBA program at Cambridge University, which is in what country, Con?
Isn't that in England?
That's in England. That's exactly right. So Cambridge University in England. This is a United States Marine Corps captain talking about how he wants to get into a school in England. And he said, I immediately sought out opportunities to fund it. Many military veterans are doing the same. Given the tumultuous times brought on by the global COVID-19 pandemic, many transitioning veterans are opting to seek out higher education instead of an alternate career outside of the military. However, the GI Bill alone cannot merely offset the rising cost of private education. For example, a top 20 MBA program can cost $237,000. Now, I have a question for you, Cox, because you're an educated fella. there has got to be a point where you look at the cost of these schools and you will say, there is not a chance in the fucking world I ever get a return on investment. Never.
Gosh, that's tough, because I don't have my MBA. I do have friends who have them, though. I have some friends who say, like, oh yeah, that was good for this reason. But I don't know that I really have any friend who said, wow, I learned all these things that are so, so valuable. It's more for the network and the degree and to say that you went there. So it could be tough. I will say there are other ways to get the education paid for it. Like, depending on your level of disability, you can get everything paid for. You don't even have to worry about the GI Bill. But yeah, $237,000 is crazy. And then I don't know if you guys, or actually I know you guys haven't watched yet, but there's the documentary about the college admissions scandal and talking about all the different universities in this country. And one of the things that stuck out to me, and I would imagine it's relevant for MBA programs too, is this gentleman who used to work at Stanford admissions said, there are over 3,000 universities in this country. And by and large, if you want to, you can get a somewhat equal, obviously there's going to be some disparity, but you can get a really good education at just about any college in this country. And really, these schools have just been selling a name for so long, and this narrative that if you don't go to one of these schools, then ultimately you'll be a failure. So if
right,
you
because science is essentially
programs,
the same, no matter where, yeah, no matter where you're going, science is fucking science. The people who are researching it are the same. You're reading the same textbook no matter where you're at. Right. To me, it's kind of like tools. Like Kyle and I know that there's certain tool companies that are they are made in the same exact factory. It's the same fucking tool. One of them's painted red, it's going to be $350. One of them's painted orange, it's going to be $210. They're the same fucking tool, just with different color paint on it. And that's essentially what a lot of these schools are. But when you start talking about $237,000 and 3 years to do it, if you're going there, I think that that is a great option for somebody who is still very early 20s to get your foot in the door. If you're already in your 30s or you're approaching 30s and you already have some life experience, I can't imagine that setting aside the time 3 years to start your next career is a wise move at all. Like I would think that going out there and getting the real world experience is much more important. But this guy says that he wants $237,000 for any of these top 20 programs. Top MBA programs are competed against each other for impressive candidates. After all, the legacy of a prestige school relies heavily on the school's alumni. And again, if you're getting out and you don't have a whole lot of connections, having one of these degrees where it is a nice check in the box, because if you have a degree from Princeton or Yale or Harvard or Brown, and you go to put like an application in, somebody sees that you have an MBA from there, that catches people's eye. Like it just does. That carries a lot more weight than an MBA from fucking UTSA. It just does.
Yes, it does. Interesting you say the word prestige, though. It's kind of funny. One of the other things in the documentary, the word prestige has come to be known in our society as special and elite, but it actually comes from the French word, which means illusion. And it's just so ironic that is the word.
I mean, that's essentially what it is. Like when
exactly.
And it's the kind of like what we've talked about when we've talked to some congresspeople. Like, dude, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Like you grow up thinking that these politicians are geniuses and that they're like the smartest of the smart become congressmen. That's just not the case. We've talked to people who are just flat out fucking stupid.
Yeah. I will.
They know how to string together. They know how to do like some networking, things like that. But overall, they're dumb.
Yeah, no, it is a very big, from my perspective, a big foot in the door type thing. When you're talking about Princeton, Harvard Business School, Wharton, it's a very big foot in the door type thing. And also, it's very narrow in terms of what industries I think are really going to require that type of foot in the door. And you're basically, I would say, finance and tech.
And even in tech doesn't care.
Not even
greed.
Tech.
No, it's really more
tech
the finance.
Cares, like, what can you do?
Right.
And we're going to talk about that some with Erica, but I want to keep going through this captain's open letter because it is mind blowing. He says most veterans will qualify for the GI Bill and additional assistance from the Yellow Ribbon program. However, the GI Bill only covers a small portion of the tuition for top 20 MBA programs, and the Yellow Ribbon program isn't guaranteed. Scholarships appear to be the best alternative to paying for the expensive degree programs, and scholarships are often based on financial need or merit. Years of military service may not be the most lucrative career path, but military service will provide a stable enough income in order for a candidate not to qualify for these financial needs. Merit-based scholarships are very difficult to come by because of the result of the sheer number of people trying to apply for them. After earning a master's degree in accounting, working with the world's largest financial consulting firm, serving my country as a ground intelligence officer, and starting my own business, it has still been difficult to receive significant consideration for one of the few merit-based scholarships available. I fucking hate this guy. This guy's the worst. Like, you have all this shit and you're still... Pay for it yourself, you fucking poor bitch. Like, don't go
to Cambridge.
Like, it should be for people that are poor. Like, if you're getting out as a captain or a major, you made pretty good money, like, along the way. Mm-hmm, like, realistically, yeah. You make way more than the average person in San Antonio. The median income in San Antonio is $48,000. The captain makes a shit ton more than that. A mm-hmm. sergeant makes more than that whenever they get BAH. So you're saying that you don't have that much money. Oh, I need a scholarship. Don't get that fucking degree from Cambridge then, you dumb bitch.
Yeah, there are
options. Why does it got to be Cambridge?
Right.
I don't know.
How about go to an American school?
Yeah.
We fought a revolution, dude.
Yeah.
Be on our side for once.
I bet this guy watches royal weddings and just loses his mind.
Probably.
He goes on to say, military veterans are some of the most qualified individuals to add depth and diversity to a top 20 NBA cohort. Why do you care so much about the top 20? Mm-hmm. Open it up. Top 100. There's a lot of schools. I mean, top 100 would be fine.
He says he started his own business. I assume he wants to continue that. What does having an MBA do for that? Like, it helps if you want to be like an investment banker. You're not getting a job pretty much unless you have an MBA there. So, like,
and people get fed the fuck up with entitlement, right? Like, that's a huge conversation amongst military veterans. And I would venture to say, you poll almost every outgoing veteran. Do you agree with entitlement or do you not? I would bet 99% would be like, no, entitlement's not good. This article is the example of entitlement. Listen to this. He says, however, if a military veteran NBA candidates are struggling to stand out amongst the already crowded field vying for scarce scholarships, how do they pay for the rising tuition costs of continued education? The responsibility is on the university themselves. They need to make more money, more scholarship money available to military veterans in order to attract them in attending their prestigious institutions, in order to add a well-proven leader who can round out the diversity of an MBA cohort. Universities need to step up. So Cambridge, what do you say? If I'm Cambridge, I say, why don't you take your little letter that you wrote for the Marine Corps Times, polish that motherfucker up real nice, fold it like origami into a little swan, turn that motherfucker sideways and shove it straight up your candy ass.
I would say, I don't think it's a one for one. I don't think it's you were in the military, you were a good leader. There are plenty of people, even in leadership roles, that weren't good
Winter
leaders.
Was not a good leader.
Yeah.
He just chugged Dr. Pepper a lot.
So the idea, this idea that just because you were in the military, now I should be afforded all of these things. Now, granted, I think military service certainly should be considered when you're trying to go for these very competitive MBA programs. Absolutely. Because you are going to experience things in the military that will separate you from the average 21, 22-year-old.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and that should be held accountable. But then on
but
top
there's
of that,
a difference
all of a sudden,
between that being like the extra tick that gets you over the line and being like, oh, you're a veteran. Here's $237,000 to go to Cambridge. Fuck out of here.
Thank you for your service, but in a British accent.
Right. Yeah. But no, that's even crazier that we're talking about Cambridge. Yeah. You know, you're not even talking about like a state university in this country. You might have an argument.
Your GI Bill money.
Yeah. Yeah. You want this other country to consider your military service for a country that isn't.
I mean, they're allies, like in the truest sense of the world along the way. We have a lot of people that listen in England. And I think my favorite interview ever is from a dude who was in the Battle of Danny Boy. That's my favorite interview that I've ever done.
Yeah. That was a great one.
Besides Woody Williams, most likely. And, Stanley Rubin, but like, so there's some good shit that's happening in England. Cambridge is obviously a great school. So is Oxford. There's a ton of great schools over there. There's a ton of great schools over here. No one in the world wants to hear an officer who has his own business, already has a master's degree in accounting, bitching about his opportunities that he won't have a spot to work or go to school. Shut the fuck up, dude.
Can you imagine like if Brian Wood. He's the Danny Boy guy. If he would be like, hey, Yale, pay for my tuition, they'd be like, "Who? Why the fuck do we care about you?"
It's yeah, because it's the other thing. Maybe more so if it's somebody like him. Right. Like somebody like this him guy, that has that background. Sure. Yes.
Yeah. This guy is of no particular importance. Right. He other than I mean,
not
that he's
not of any importance. It's just not. No, I just like, and he would be, can you imagine if he wrote this cross. Same, he writes this same exact letter. The same exact letter, but he doesn't do it for himself. That's what comes off. It's so unbelievably self-serving.
Yes.
Somebody that's in his position that has an MBA or not an MBA, but a master's degree in accounting, captain, owns his own business, coming out and saying, hey, I understand that the GI Bill is great. It's better than it's ever been. There's still a lot more we can do. I want to put, if you are a military member who gets out with a disability rating above like 50%, that you get an additional stipend that will help you out even more to pay for some of the costs, because schools can be difficult and you don't have the ability maybe to have a second job. Go out and help people who are less fortunate. That is what leadership is. Not going out and writing a letter about yourself and how you can't get into fucking Cambridge. There's no shot this guy walks into Erica's office and walks out with a job, and you're going to hear why. Here's the CEO of Barstool Sports, Erica Nardini. All right, now at Zero Block 30, we have my boss, Erica Nardini, who is the CEO of Barstool Sports, has grown us from a tiny little company. When we came back, I think you were employee number like 17 or something like that, and I was 21. We've been here for a bit. It's a lot bigger now. But Erica has a podcast called Token CEO, where she talks a lot about leadership in the business world and how things are going behind the scenes at Barstool. But there's a lot of crossover between leadership and civilian world and leadership and military world. So I don't know, Erica, have you ever been told what the military leadership mantra is, or the Marine Corps military like leadership mantra?
No, hit me.
So there's an acronym. It's called JJ Did Tie a Buckle. And it's one that you learn at boot camp, where you go through all the different traits of what makes a leader, what the Marine Corps views as makes you a leader. And the acronym means justice, judgment, dependability, initiative, decisiveness, tact, integrity, enthusiasm, bearing, unselfishness, courage, knowledge, loyalty, and endurance. Like, it goes through all of these things.
Not messing around.
It's not messing around. Not pussyfooting around the issue at all. So I kind of wanted to get your opinion on if you think that this, not only obviously it is effective in the military, but if this is something that you look for when you hire people to join you in the C-suite or in a manager type position.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea of that. I think, you know, you got to earn leadership. I always think that leadership is something that's earned. You know, one of the things that is hard when you're interviewing an ex-military person is, like, one of the first things they always say, you're an exception to this, is I'm a good leader. And it's like, okay, great. But like, can you make the widgets and can you be part of the system? You know, I interviewed a guy the other day and he was like, well, I have a lot of passion. And I was like, all right, well, great. I love that you have a lot of passion, but like, how would you help us move our company forward? So I love the acronym. I like that it's so deep. I like that it starts with justice. I like that enthusiasm is part of it. And I think, you know, the things that I really care about at Barstool Sports anyways, is that we're a pretty fast moving company. We have an incredibly high degree of risk tolerance. We are extremely comfortable being uncomfortable. We're comfortable making other people uncomfortable. I think we're very definitive and decisive about, and even if it's the wrong decision, we've made a decision, which I think is a good.
And that's very military too. It doesn't matter if the way that you're doing is the right way, act, like do something. Act.
That's right. So I would agree with that. I think the things that I care about for leaders at our company are, you know, do you have a vision? Like, do you have a vision and a plan for where you want to go? Are you a person who can get other people to buy into your vision and want to follow you? Are you able to execute with excellence and really execute with excellence? Are you consistent? I think one of the things that make great leaders is consistency. And, you know, I think people don't like when they don't always know what they're going to get. And to really move a large company forward or a platoon forward or an initiative forward, you need to be consistent because people need to know what they're showing up for and feel good about it, or at least buy into the vision of it. So those are the things that I care about. And then obviously people need to be good at what they do and understand, you know, understand the core function, their core function.
Yep. And I get a ton of emails all the time of people who are getting out of the military or transitioning out, and they have this idea of what somebody in your position as CEO wants to hear whenever they get out. And there is almost, and I don't want to say delusions of grandeur, but there is a lot of delusions of grandeur when people get out of the military, where they have been, you're 25 years old, you're in charge of 200 people, and you're able to do that effectively. That does not transition well to the civilian world right away. You have to absolutely earn it. So I want to kind of go through some of the things that the military teaches you about interviewing and going up for a position, and see if you think that that kind of thing would be effectual if somebody was interviewing with a position with you.
Okay.
So when you go, we have these things called board Marines or board soldiers or whoever. So if you're going up to be like the non-commissioned officer of the quarter, where you go in and you get asked questions, it's essentially like a Jeopardy style of trivia, questions about leadership, things like that. When you walk into a room, they want you to have a commanding presence when you walk into a room. So if I'm teaching somebody how to do this, they come in, I want you to fucking slam the door behind you. Like you walk into a room, you shut that motherfucker hard, and then you go and you
the room.
Yeah, you command presence in the room. Somebody does that. Let's say they're interviewing for a lead producer role, and they come into your office and they slam the door. You're probably taken aback.
Totally taken aback. That's also so masculine,
right?
Like just so antiquated a little bit, which is, I'm all about having presence. I think you need to be confident. You have to project well. You need to be articulate. You need to look like you have your shit together. And you need to be convincing. You have to convey who you are and why someone should listen to you. And you need to be convincing in whatever lie you're making up about what you've done. But I don't, like, if someone came in here and slammed the door, I'd be like, okay.
Hardo.
Yeah, totally.
So do you have because I think confidence is very key in, especially in leadership positions, when you're talking about you're a leader of people, like you have to be very confident. Do you think if you came in and you saw somebody's resume on paper and you saw that they were a military member and they're or a veteran, that could come off as, if you're a military member, it's almost like, where a normal person coming in doing like, oh, that's confident. This guy might be cocky.
No, I think to be in the military means that you've sacrificed for this country and you've given yourself in service of this country. So honestly, I would give a leg up to anybody who's a veteran or in the service. I also have a lot of empathy because I've seen it firsthand. My dad was in the military. My best friend married someone from the military. And one of the hard things I think about the transition from being in the military to having a desk job is there's so much in a lot of ways, there's no freedom in the military. And in other ways, there's so much freedom. You're very active. You're exercising constantly. So much of the military is about practice. Mm-hmm. You know, the practice missions, the preparation, that when you get, you know, chained to a desk at some company where there isn't that level of consistent leadership, there isn't the level of discipline and organization, and you're not able to, on a very frequent ongoing basis, prove your ability to get more opportunity. And that opportunity comes like at a very prescriptive cycle. It's extremely frustrating. So I think that that's hard. I have a lot of empathy for anyone from the armed services or, you know, who's currently in the armed services and looking to do their next thing. I have a lot of empathy for just the change in your life.
And it's also very difficult for me, for example, working at Barstool, coming from a Marine background where I
everything that I was going to do that day basically was decided for me for the most part before I got there. Then coming into a situation like Barstool, being remote at Barstool, which could not be more opposite of that. Like everything is based on my personal initiative, what I need to do, and learning how to balance those things is by far the most difficult thing I had to do transition-wise. So hard.
And it's also very insecure, you know, like it's hard to be out on your own. It's hard to have,
especially when there's a pandemic and you don't hardly see or talk to anybody.
I completely agree with that. And you've done such a great job of it. And you all, you know, you're in some ways, you and Kate are so funny to me because Cons to me is more like stereotypically military, right? Like he's got the crew cut, like we're high and tight. He, you know, all of you have incredible manners. I would say better manners than anyone else here.
We don't call you E on Instagram. Rants.
Don't call me E on the Instagram. Shitting on my partner. But anyways, but I also think you and Kate are such weird brains. You know, like I think of you and I think of a wild color pants and a beard that used to go on for miles, you know? So I also think that there's a lot of, just because you're in the military doesn't mean that you're a cog, and it doesn't mean you are a, you know, complete rule follower, or you're anal, or, you know, you're one dimensional. And, you know, that's what I really hope for military. One, I think this country is going to have a hard time getting people to go into the military. I think our military has a recruiting problem and a marketing problem right now. And then two, I really am hopeful. It's kind of like me being a CEO of this company. Like people were like, who the fuck are you? Like, you don't have any of the experience it takes to have this job. Like you didn't come from sports. You don't have a business degree. So I also am really hopeful that people from the military can, someone's going to take the chance on them. Somebody took a chance on me. We took a chance on you. It's been awesome. But just that people take a chance and people are open to seeing the whole person.
So if somebody was walking in, let's say they're not necessarily a high level position, let's a pretty entry level. They want to make content. They just got out. What would you want to see? What type of personality traits do you want to see from somebody like that?
I want to see people approach us all the time this way of, I would be a great blogger. I would be, you know, I want to bring my ideas to Barstool. And my next question is always, well, what's the idea? And then it usually breaks down very, very fast. So it's like, well, my idea is that I could create this thing about the thing about the thing. And I'm like, well, have you done it?
Yeah, that's what I always say. Fuck you, show me. Like, I don't care what you say. I don't care. Show me it. I don't, you can say I'm going to make this video series. Show me it, even if it's 2 minutes long.
So show me is always the first thing. So what I look, you know, what I care about is people who have opinion, people who have weird brains. They're creative, highly creative, funny, obviously. People who are highly authentic and relatable, who are able to do the thing and talk about doing the thing at the same time. And then people who have enough initiative where they didn't do it for money. They didn't do it for fame. They just were interested in whatever the thing is that they're passionate about, and they're making content because that's all they know how to do. I can't stand when we interview people high or low and they're like, well, if you pay me, I'll do it. And I'm like, if it's only ever about the money for you, and granted, I get that some jobs are just about the money. I've had jobs that are just about the money, but if you don't have a drive in you that you need to do the thing, then you're never going to be as good as the guy or girl next to you who does.
And I think that's a huge plus for military folks, because you'll never hear a military person say, well, that's not in my contract. I'm not doing that. Right. Like you get asked to do something and you fucking do it. So what has been, I'll put you on a spot here a little bit, your biggest leadership challenge that you've had to overcome at Barstool, and how did you do it?
Oh, there's been so many leadership challenges. You know, when I first got here, when I first got here, I was a woman. These guys were not in good shape. They didn't like one another. There was a lot of tension. There was a huge amount of uncertainty, and there was a complete lack of communication. And there was a huge feeling of, I would say, apprehension around Barstool Sports. Excitement, certainly. The Chernin Group had invested. There looked to be a future. Nobody knew who was going and who wasn't. Nobody
PFT
knew.
PFT had just showed up, big hire. Part of my take was going on.
Correct. And no one knew if we would make it or not. And so I think, you know, one of the early leadership challenges was getting Dave to trust me, getting Big Cat to trust me, getting Kevin Clancy to trust me, Kay Marco, really understanding who they were, understanding what they wanted, understanding the dynamic that they had with one another, getting them to listen to, hey, here's what my vision is, here's what we're going to do. Adding hiring, you know, being like, we don't have this skill set here. We don't have this person here. We need this person. So, and then I think I think a really big part of that was I decided as a leader, I was going to be 100% all in. And not even as a leader, as a teammate, I was going to be, as someone else in the platoon, I'm all in. So I, every day was at the office, or when we didn't have an office, I was in the coffee shop.
So and, military perspective, you're PTing with the troops. Definitely. You're doing it too.
Definitely doing it too. Because I needed to learn them. I didn't understand a lot of the language. I didn't have all the history. I didn't get all the jokes. I didn't have eyes for where they had come from. And I felt that the best way to get eyes was to be immersed.
Big mistake when you ordered first lunch was Cheese Boy for everybody. That was
bad. Bad. Yep. So there have been a lot of leadership lessons, chaps, I would say.
Yeah, and I think it is interesting to see, and I think that every single battalion commander or sergeant major who would be listening to this would agree on small unit level, like that it is so important to know the people that you're with. And mm-hmm. once they, if they don't know you, they're not going to trust you. And
correct.
I can't imagine what Barstool would be if you had the mentality of a lot of CEOs where you come in and you're like, okay, you hired me. It's going to be my way or the fucking highway. This is how we're going to do it because I say this is how we're going to do it. Would not work here. And I think you knew that right away.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think, you know, I met with someone this morning who worked at another Chernin company, and I was talking about a former CEO that they had worked for. And I was like, how's that guy to work for? And the person said, sucked, like hated working for them. And I said, why? And they said that they didn't listen. They were like a board member more than a CEO. They weren't engaged. They weren't involved. Their every job was beneath the person versus no job being beneath the person. And, you know, I think that Barstool is so military-esque, actually, in that we are out on the frontier. We are in the trenches with one another, and we are covered in shit and grime. But it's our shit and grime. And we're the only ones who are going to get out of the foxhole because we understand how we got in the foxhole. And we also are the only ones who really understand where we want to go. So you really have to love your, you got to know who's in your, you know, who's with you on the bench or whatever the analogy you want to use. You got to know who's got what skills to do what. And then, you know, I feel like my job is just to bring everybody together and like get out of the hole.
Yeah. I think that's the job of the leader. And I think one aspect, and we've talked about this before, where I would have loved to see you in uniform because of certain ways that you like there's CEOs and there's battalion commanders who have open door policies. And I think that a lot of times people who say they have an open door policy, the door's not actually open.
Yeah.
You are very different in that regard, where if I have something that's going on, I could tell you and know one, that it's going to remain private and you have my best interest at heart. And two, that in doing that, you gain the trust of people.
Yep.
And I think that really helps like a leader when your folks do trust you, But at the same time, they know, I know at any point you could be like, chaps, I don't care. This is what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. and that's what I'll do.
I think that you've done a great job of, I think I think at the end of the day, everyone is a human and everyone here goes through personal shit and professional shit. Everyone here has great days and bad days. Sometimes you're feeling it. Sometimes you're not feeling it. We are in a human business. Mm-hmm. The military is a human business. Barstool Sports is a human business that makes content. And I'm really appreciative. I do have an open door policy. I will talk to anyone in this company. It makes me upset when we hire people here who I don't know who we're hiring. Like, I have every person in this company in my cell phone. I update my cell phone every single week. I have 253 Barstool people in there. Because
are they all Barstool whoever? Like everybody Barstool that I Barstool Mary, Barstool Karen, Barstool. Totally.
Because at the beginning, I never knew when we were going to fuck up something and who I had to call. And I felt like it was a liability if I didn't have their number in my phone. And now,
or if you only have their stage name, like Chaps.
Right. And I mean, you know this. I mean, Dave and I were freaking out at bonus time one year of like somebody hacked into our payroll. And it was like, oh, no, that's Chaps. But, that was, and you learn, that's the other thing I think that's so cool about being part of something is, I guarantee we have one of the only finance departments where in the spreadsheet in ADP, our payment system, it has your nicknames in it mm-hmm. because that's what people know you as. People don't know your real name. And so we had to build a system for ourselves. And I really love that. And I think being in tune with what's happening with the highest level people here and the lowest level people here is just like it's so fulfilling.
And one last question, because you've grown Barstool from a $15 million valuation to whatever the fuck it is now. I imagine it's in the billions now. But what do you do next to not rest on those laurels? Because I know human nature is to be like $15 million to $1 billion. I did a pretty damn good job. Like, yeah. I want to go buy a beach house and just hang out and chill. How do you stay motivated to do the next thing?
Oh, I never was in it for the money and for the valuation, to be honest with you. I love the people we have here. I love how weird this company is. I would just pick at myself. I think if I didn't do something all day, I would just like self-loathe and be like, ah. So I think that there's so much ahead for us. There's so much new content we can make. There's new platforms for content being created every day. And I really believe in us. And I'm so curious about what could we do next? Do we get into finance? How do we do sports betting better? I'm still so critical. Like I walked around with the wide screenshot from Greektown, which is where we were doing the live stream for NCAA basketball on Sunday night. I've had 10 meetings this week alone on like, why the fuck does it look like this? The graphics look like shit. The brands integrated is terrible. All I can see is Dave's crotch. Like, why are we like, we have to be better. So I think ultimately, if you have a troop or a company or a team of people who just care and who want to be better, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if we were worth $5 or $500 million or $5 billion. Like that doesn't matter to me at all. I like winning, obviously, but I just want to keep getting better. And I think that everyone else, the best people here do too.
And you could tell that Dave and yourself are Patriots fans. Like you signed the Penn National deal and it's like, okay, what's next? We're on to Cincinnati, essentially. Like, totally. That's basically right. How it's been going. There's been times where I'm like, they gotta fucking chill. Like I see your Instagram story. I'm like, Erica, take a vacation. My God.
I know.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Erica. Hopefully while Kate's out, we can have you back on again. And if you have any questions for her, make sure she does this Facebook group where Token CEO Facebook group where they'll hop in and she does Clubhouse too. So make sure you follow her, Erica Nardini on Twitter, or EK Nardini, right?
EKA, yep.
And make sure you go check her out there and make sure you send her some questions if you have any. Thank you, Erica. Appreciate it.
Bye, chaps.
Bye.
See you a little bit.
All right. All right. That's a good little talk on leadership. We have a friend on the program who used to do a little talk on leadership on a damn near weekly basis. And his name is FDR. And he's back to give us a little ad read. And I'm excited about that. Mr. President, take it away. If you have 30 free minutes, you never have to worry about a break-in at home ever again. That is how quick and easy it is to set up a security system from SimpliSafe. It is the kind of thing that is so easy to do. You can do it during a Netflix binge, whatever that may be, watching the game, or listening to a certain podcast, whatever those may be. SimpliSafe is incredibly easy to customize your home. Just go to simplisafe.com/ZBT. My good bitch Chaps has done that recently and set up his new home with ZBT, SimpliSafe's code, to get one free camera. It'll get you a house in about a week, as Chaps can verify, which means by this time next week, your whole family can go to bed knowing your home is being guarded and not by that scoundrel, Major Biden. It's easy to assume everyone in your house already feels safe, but they might not, and it's worthwhile to talk about. And SimpliSafe is a small, easy step to make sure everyone feels safe at home. Go to simplisafe.com/ZBT today to customize your security system and get a free security camera. You can also get a 60-day risk-free trial, so there's nothing to lose. That's simplisafe.com/ZBT. All right.
Well, so we talked to Erica.
Thank you. Yeah. So we talked to Erica about what some of her thoughts and shots fired at cons. All right. Her saying that cons is the stereotypical veteran.
Oh, that's not great.
I've yet to hear this interview, so I don't really know the context, or if you're so just fooling with me, or what?
I've been keeping it. I did it yesterday. I haven't sent it to the Kyle or Cons yet. So she basically says that we have a podcast where you essentially, whenever somebody comes to Barstool and they will ask about having a job, so many people will be like, oh, I have this idea. I have this idea. I have this idea. And essentially it's been forever. Fuck you. Show me. Show me what the idea is. And she was saying that we have people in golf that aren't, it's not traditional golf media where it's Trent and Riggs and Frankie and Lurch, where they're doing their own thing, covering hockey in the way that Biz and Wit do it. It's just so totally different. She said, military wise, you have our group, which has some weird brains. She's like, well, God is very straightforward veteran. And then you have you and Kate who don't exactly fit the mold. And I was like, you know, you're exactly right. Yes. Cons is by far the most Venn diagram, center of the Venn diagram for veterans that we have on the show, for sure.
And that's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing at all.
No.
Yeah, and now hearing that, I don't know that she would, knowing her, I don't think she said that to be malicious in any way. But
no, she wasn't trying to be rude.
No, I know. No, but if you just look at,
doesn't bust your chops. I do.
Yeah, exactly. if you just look at all of us, the three of us on paper, I guess I took the most traditional route. Now, where that ended was ending up with Barstool Sports, because I still, you know, that being at Barstool is still unique to any veteran. But by and large, I took the most traditional route that most veterans take out of the military. Whereas
I got veterans, lucky. When people
you
ask
got
me
lucky
advice,
as shit. And Kate bounced around being working as a vendor. She was going to be a dental tech. You two, you know. Well,
I was totally satisfied, dude. Honest to God, I would have been totally happy and content with being a stay-at-home dad. That's kind of what I had intended to do. Be retired, stay with my kids, I thought dream scenario for me would be to host a podcast or a radio show that talked about the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's all I really want to do. I had no idea any of this stuff was going to come up, but we did talk about it a little bit. And I wanted to get both of your thoughts, because walking away, one, whenever you get out,
you realize it makes sense. Like, looking back, it makes complete sense that your staff and COs, your officers, have no good advice for what to do whenever you get out, because spoiler alert, they're still in.
Right.
They have no idea what to do. If they've been in there, like, maybe they do if they came in a little bit later, like in life. But if they came in like us, where you're 21, 22, cons, you were like 18 when you went to West Point.
17.
So if you have that type of background, you have no idea what it's like whenever you get out. So you have to kind of rely on the people who had done it before. And I think the idea of going in incredibly humble is always the better move. Like, have your resume on paper where you look really good, but you have these veterans who get out and they will be cocky as fuck in an interview, just constantly talking about how good of a leader they are, what type of leadership they had. And that, dude, that would have been me. Like, when she was giving that information about when you come in, be a little bit humble and realize that most likely if you're 27, 28 years old and you're walking out of the military, it does not translate to a lot of jobs where all you're going to be given 40 people that you're in charge of again. That just doesn't happen for the most part.
Yeah,
no, you have to not start at the very bottom, but it is unrealistic to think that the level of responsibility that you had as a staff NCO or as a 22, 23-year-old platoon leader is going to automatically be the same level when you walk into the business world. Now, there are a ton of skills that do translate. I do believe that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But you can't expect to have that level of responsibility immediately. You have to then
Can't expect the same level of privilege too, because you work your dick off to get to the spot where you no longer have to take the trash out at the end of the day in the military. Once you become a sergeant, when I was a staff NCO, if I saw a sergeant touch the trash, I would be fucking furious. Mm-hmm. Like you don't take the trash out. The Lance Corporals, the PFC, they take the trash out. So then whenever you get to the civilian world, and let's say you become like a shift leader somewhere, you still have that same mentality where I'm not doing some of this grunt work. Dude, you've got to go into every single position when you first start with that PFC mindset of I'll do fucking anything that's asked and I'll do everything that's not asked too.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I think part of the reason so many veterans now, when they do transition and they might end up in interviews where they're coming off as extremely cocky, is also a byproduct of our country and the outpouring of support that this country has had for veterans since 9/11. And I sincerely appreciate that. But I think it's then skewed that we walk into things and walk into job interviews and think, well, I'm the best option you got. No matter what I say, I'm the best thing. And at the end of the day, while your service is greatly appreciated and can translate, you still have to understand what we're talking about here, that, okay, that's great. You have all that experience and a lot of skills that translate, but you've never done this job. So how can you expect to just be the best all coming out the gate?
Let's just say it this way. Let's just act like you've been hanging out and you are the product of a beautiful French chef who knows how to cook the best carrot cake cupcake that you've ever had. The carrot cake cupcake is so delicious, it doesn't need to be icing. Like, there doesn't even need to be – you made yourself so appealing that you don't even need icing. But then let your veteran service be that icing on top of the cupcake that you've made yourself. Like, get as educated as you possibly can, get ready as much as you possibly can, and then just let that stuff speak for itself. Because if you plan on that carrying you forever, it's just not going to work. It's not. Unless you can start a military podcast and talk about it every day.
Yeah, that's actually a good avenue. So if you want to take that route, go for it. But I will say one of the things, and I actually just had this conversation earlier with a guy who's transitioning out of the military. You know, you have to find a balance, right? You don't want to then on the other side just completely sell yourself short, like, oh, well, I'm just the guy who's never worked at the widget factory, so I can't really know how to begin to understand how to make widgets. Well, no, you still do have experiences. Like, the idea that you were in charge of a ton of money, a ton of equipment, and a ton of people's lives at a lot of times a very young age, where if you put that into the business world, people don't get that level of responsibility until they're maybe 15 plus years in. So you right. do have that experience, and that is extremely valuable. And
you know, when you say it that way, it is shocking that the military can even function.
Right?
I mean, the things that we put 25-year-olds in charge of is insanity.
I mean, I was 23 and in charge of $35 million worth of equipment and 33 other people. Are you kidding me?
Dude, I was 23 years old and being like, yeah, no, the vice president can walk in. There's definitely not a bomb in here.
Yeah.
Oops, yikes.
We train and you hope you're prepared to be in those situations and then listen to and surround yourself with the great people around you. But at the end of the day, being that young and in charge of that level of responsibility is a great asset to take into a job interview. And being in combat, I can tell you how, now having worked in the civilian world, not once have I ever been shot at in the civilian world. So being able to complete a job.
When and that's saying something because you've worked in New York City.
Exactly. Yeah. I have worked in New York City my entire career. So, you know, to have that experience of being under severe pressure and still having to get a task done, that's another skill that is highly valuable. So you have to find that balance of, yes, I do have experience that can translate, but I'm not the greatest thing ever. And figure out how do you sell yourself to be a value add without sounding like a complete jerk.
Well, I'll tell you one thing you got to do. You absolutely have to man the fuck up. Like, that's just one part of it. Man TF up is dedicated to helping you keep your man card current and active. While Father Time is constantly trying to kick you in the nuts, man the fuck up helps you fight back. Our all-natural, highly effective supplements are designed to work with your body to provide results. Man the fuck up is more than a brand. It's a movement. There's no hiding the fact that guys nowadays need to man the fuck up. Quit your bitching, stop your finger pointing, and man the fuck up. No beard filter on social media brings light to the idea that beards can be weak chinned. I saw this picture. Speaking of that, there's this dude who trains with Magnuminov. What's that dude? Khalid Magnuminov? The dude, sure. The fucking UFC fighter.
Yeah, I don't know who you're talking about. Whatever.
No, I'm talking about important. What the, how the fuck yeah. I say his name?
Khabib, I'm not really sure.
Khabib,
something.
Yeah, he's from fucking somewhere. Well, yeah. He has this Russian training partner who this dude has like this thick fucking beard, man. And he just, when he's standing there and, you know, they're doing the side-by-side fight pose where this guy is supposed to be like a young phenom, where he is how Khabib fucking came into the UFC, whatever the fuck his name is, and was dominant. Like, and mm-hmm. he knew wrestling better than anybody else, and he was really good at jiu-jitsu, but his striking game on his feet wasn't that great. This dude is apparently everything that he is as far as wrestling and jiu-jitsu, but can also strike like McGregor, like use the same angles and flowing and things like that. He's supposed to be just this unbelievable force. Well, they show his picture and he's constantly has a beard and he's looking down somebody's face and he looks intimidating as shit. They posted this picture of when he was like 19 before he had a beard, before he could grow a beard. He's got no chin. He's got, I mean, it's just like what, like not a strong jaw, not just not a strong jawline. He doesn't have a chin. Like it's gone, which is the reason why he can't be knocked out because nobody can catch him on the chin. It's just not there. You don't have that problem if you go with man the F up. You probably that was a roundabout way of getting there. Whoa. Make sure you go get some of their products by going mantfupnow.com/0. That's mantfupnow.com/0. You're going to get 20% off. You can also go to Amazon and search for man the TF up. com, and you're going to get 20% off if you use the code Barstool20 on Amazon. Let's move on to a little bit of save rounds and alibis. Kyle, we'll start with you.
Trying to think. I had something. I lost it.
That was a 3-second pause on a podcast. You
have Firewatch. I'll edit
Cons.
It out. No big deal.
Cons, what about you?
Well, I got a lot of save rounds, but I also had like 5 more bullets to talk about in terms of transitioning. Do we want to go into that for another episode?
I wasn't ready for it to end.
Well, we're going to have Sean on, so save him. Because my guy, he works for a company where they also place veterans. So if you have questions.
Then that's perfect. That's perfect because I think my content and my bullet points would work very well for that conversation. So
we'll save that there. If you have any questions for Sean, because he helps people get jobs every day. Like, that's what his job is he helps veterans get jobs.
I'll put something out on social media saying,
yep. Hey, and also go to the iTunes, place those comments there. It helps us keep them in place and organize and things like that. So we'll do that. What about anything else, Cons?
Yes. So we mentioned at the top of the show, what is wrong with President Biden's dogs? Get it together, Major and Champ.
One, my initial thoughts on these dogs is that they are older dogs. And whenever you're an older dog and you're getting put in a new environment, if you don't have whoever the alpha is there constantly, like,
he's all over the place, busy. Yeah.
Well, he's not doing it anyway. Joe coming off as an alpha. Come on. Like, I don't know about that. So you have Joe Biden.
Maybe in the 40s.
Everybody thought, Chaps the lib. Never going to talk shit about Biden. I've probably talked more shit about Biden than I did about Trump.
Yeah,
not yet.
It's just a different type. It's just a different type, though.
Yeah, because I mean, Joe's just an adorable old man. He really is.
By the way, do you know what his middle name is? I just found this out.
Francis.
Robinette.
Robinette.
That's some Gabe Susan Lewis shit there.
Yeah,
you gotta impeach.
At what point does ZBT get invited to 1600 Pennsylvania to get these dogs squared away?
Well, I'm trying. PFT knows some of the folks there, and he's trying to get me in there. Those pooping on the presidential rug is just inexcusable.
Come on,
and that's not on the dog. Like, if the dog did it,
that's treason.
The dog, that's on the handler. Like, that's just because you're not giving the dog enough breaks, or you're not giving him a break at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
If you feed them, you got to take them out 10 minutes later. It's just common sense.
I just can't imagine all these foreign dignitaries coming to the White House. Ooh, watch the dog left a little something on the floor there. That's just, we can't have that. We can't have that.
I mean, that being said, I did have my dog Santo shit on the Eagle Goldman anchor at the Commandant's ball. So
all right, different. Speaking of President Biden, though, too, I saw a meme. I mean, this is probably the best meme I saw yet so far of him tripping up the stairs to Air Force One. And it was the three different shots of him falling. And it was, I'm up, he sees me, I'm down.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Two more things quickly. I had a call with my insurance carrier, which is USAA. Gosh, they're just, I don't know. People have their thoughts, but I just love those guys.
No free ads.
No free ads, but
strike that from the record.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then finally.
Unbelievable.
In the middle of, we just finished three episodes so far. I think, Chaps, I think you would really like this show. I have to mention it. Stanley Tucci searching for Italy on CNN. It's this series.
Why can't they find Italy?
It's not a fucking map. I mean,
it's right there. Is it the second lieutenant?
The whole show is just Stanley Tucci in a room, and they just hand him maps and they say, "Find us Italy." No, but so it's him going to the different
like
regions
Italy's
of Italy.
Fucking Waldo.
But yeah, he goes to all these different regions, and it's the history of Italy, but it's focused on the food and learning about the history of the food. It's just super interesting. It's a really good series that I would recommend. So if you're looking for something to watch, Stanley Tucci searching for Italy on CNN.
I have a show recommendation too, and this has been around forever. 60 Days In. I've recently started watching 60 Days In, where they go to county jail.
I've seen that.
There's a guy in the first season, it's on Hulu, who is a Marine, and his name is Zach on the show. And at the end, because I'm a pretty blunt fella, like if something needs to happen and needs to be said, like I don't have any problem being like borderline rude and saying that, like in certain situations. So there's this guy on the show who is just like, for lack of a better, he's just a pussy. Like the dude is just an absolute pussy. There's this guy that's super skinny, like, and clearly a meth head, and he punched him. The dude didn't do anything, but this guy that's the pussy guy wants to be a correctional officer after he's done. Well, Zach, the Marine, they have like this, you know, at the end of Real World, the Road Rules or whatever, they have where everybody gets together and they have their talking thing. They do it on like that Real Housewives. Well, they do the same reunions. Kind of shit.
Yeah.
Right. They do like the reunion where they talk. And Zach gets asked about the guy who's a pussy being a corrections officer. And Zach goes, he's like, well, what do you think? Could he make it the host says, what do you think, Zach? Could this guy make it as a corrections officer? Zach the Marine looks dead ass in this guy's face. And he is like, look, this is no slight against you at all. Which, if somebody says that, a huge slight.
Here comes a huge slight.
So he says, no slight against you. But if I was in a scuffle or a fight in a prison and I called for backup and you showed up as my backup, I would immediately call for more backup.
That is a gigantic slight.
That's pretty big. Goes,
the guy just goes, well, you're entitled to your opinion.
Well, that's really? Just like that's your opinion.
That's how
man.
You prove your toughness. You're entitled to your opinion. Like, God damn, dude. And then he goes on. The guy clearly is hurt by this comment because you could be the toughest fellow in the world. Somebody says, you're my backup. I need more backup. Wow, that hurts.
Yeah. That stinks. Yeah.
He then says, I just got to be honest. You're not the type of person that I'd want to put my life in their hands.
So he just kept going with the insults.
Yeah. And like, I think he was trying to make himself feel better about the meanness that he just had. But I go when I was sitting in bed, I like sat up and I was like, oh my God. Like, just, and my wife said, if you have that reaction based off the type of person that you are and where you work, that was just flat out mean. Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, that is one of the meanest things I've heard somebody say to another grown man in a long time. Secondly, my second save round, I got a mini split in here in my new office. It's a little air conditioner, not like a window unit. I'll show you guys. Not like a window unit. Do you see it over in the corner?
Yes.
A dream. My friends, it like no electricity hardly at all. It doesn't cost hardly any electricity to run. It's 78 degrees in here, or 68 degrees in here.
I was going to say 78 doesn't sound comfortable.
Because it is cool all the time, but the problem was with this room, there was no ventilation. So it was a little bit humid in here.
Yeah.
And so I shut the windows, put this thing out, sucks all the humidity out. This place is a fucking dream now.
Yeah, that's what you oftentimes that's what you have to do in basements is you got to have the dehumidifier.
Yeah, it's really helped out a shit ton, so I loved it. But that's really it. We have on Tuesday's show, you're going to enjoy that one. Cons is going to be taping from North Carolina where he's going down to the Barstool Classic. If you don't follow the Barstool Classic and you haven't seen anything about it, it's an incredible event. Like what it's grown from since the first year until now, this is year three, Riggs and the Four Play Boys have just done an unbelievable job. They're going to some of the best golf courses in the country. I think there's like 25 stops this year, which is insane.
Yeah, it's
there's nuts. There's a shit from all over the place. They're in North Carolina. They're going to be in Wisconsin. They're going to be in Minnesota, Vegas. They're going to be in Arizona, LA, Austin, Dallas. They're all over the spot. And if you haven't seen any of the content, they always have great things. Like they'll have a putting contest that they'll do where last year they had Angry Cops actually came out. The Instagram guy, Angry Cops, who was an Army drill sergeant, he came out and was like yelling at people while they were trying to sink long putts. Very effective. Turns out that civilians get rattled with that type of thing.
Yeah, no, it really is a first class event through and through.
I haven't gone. I'm excited. I put down my little wish list. I want to go to Wisconsin and I want to go to Minnesota as the two golf courses that I want to go to. And then I'm obviously going to go to Austin because it's close. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited about that. I also, Trent sent me a set of golf clubs. So I'm back in the golf game.
Wonderful.
I live like really close to a Palmer course. So I'm excited about that. It's getting to be summertime here.
Palmer course, Arnold Palmer, dead or alive, chaps?
Oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
Sad, the golden bear.
Up in the sky with Bob Dole. And
Bob Dole's still alive, too. So are we, but we'll be back on Tuesday when we will have the fella who starred in the Oscar documentary series or documentary Free Solo. He is going to be on the show. Alex came on and I talked to him this week. He is a great dude. You're going to hear his interview on Tuesday. We'll see you then. Sound the retreat.